Hi, everyone. Welcome to Sad Me of the Past presents Ghosts on the Radio, where we invite young writers from the Iowa Youth Writing Project in to talk about a ghost story they created for the Ghosts on the Radio Haunted Audio Anthology. That story may be cutesy, demure, sigma-busting, low-key goated, niche, all of the above, or something else entirely. Every infant must take those early, brave, awkward steps when learning to walk. These non-infants are currently right now making their own gutsy, cringe, lit-coated efforts as they set out to bring the smoke. So here they are, these young writers, in that clutch moment when they're bursting with no cap or getting the ick, rizzed up by language or positively shook, hyped to become a writer or spooked that they're mid. Don't at me, they're thinking, but do it be like that? We've compiled four interviews with IYWP writers into this one podcast. The writers, ranging in age from 9 to 14, were among the winners of the Ghosts on the Radio writing contest this past fall. You'll hear each of their interviews first, followed by a dramatic reading of their winning story. You can hear all the stories on the Ghosts on the Radio podcast on the Writing University Podcast Network. Hi, everybody. Welcome to a special edition of Sad Me of the Past. I'm Stephen Lovely, director of the Iowa Young Writers Studio.
And I'm Lauren Haldeman, the senior editor at the Writing University.
And I'm Danny Colacci, director of the Magid Center for Writing here at the University of Iowa. And Stephen, what makes this a special edition of Sad Me of the Past?
Well, Danny, it is special edition because today we have in the studio Imogen Olszewski, who is one of the winners of the Ghosts on the Radio short story contest sponsored by the Iowa Youth Writing Project. We're so happy to have her here today to talk about her writing, to talk about her story, The Circus is Coming, which we have just listened to recently.
Frightening.
Very amazing story. And Imogen, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
So maybe, Imogen, you can start by just telling us a little about yourself.
My name is Imogen Olszewski. I was born and raised in Iowa City, lived here all my life. I currently go to Northwest. I used to go to Horn Elementary. I will go to West High. I'm 13 right now. My birthday is actually next week, March 21st. So,
All right. So
close to being 14.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I'm going to get to drive, get a job.
It's hard to find a job in this town at 14. We've been trying to find my 14-year-old a job for a while.
Well, where do you look? Where do you look?
So there is an ice cream place right by my house, Dane's Dairy.
It is. Do they hire at 14?
They do. And all so right. It's one of my best friends who lives, I think she lives a street over from me. We're both going to try to apply.
Nice.
And then I think her parents know it's under new management. So her parents know the guy that runs it. So
okay.
We should hopefully get a job there. And then I know people who've worked there and said it's super fun. So
and that's an Iowa City institution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of kids from my school go there. And then I've gone to summer camps and referenced and been oh yeah. And then we went to Dane's Dairy and they're where? Yeah.
What summer camps did you go to? Do you go to Wapsie?
I do go to Wapsie. Yes, I'm going again this year to do Ranger, which
you're doing Ranger?
Mm-hmm.
Ranger's straight up intense.
Really?
Is it
Navy SEAL training?
It kind of is.
Or Ranger training?
You sleep outside? No, you sleep in tents outside.
Yeah, it's I think they're on platforms. So it's like a wood platform and then the tent and then they have cot beds. And I know you cook your own food, and so the kitchen provides pasta. I've had friends who've done it, and they were telling me all about it. They said it's super fun, and you get to do things that no one else in the camp does. So the whole camp will be doing not corny activity. I don't want to throw any
they're pretty
shade,
corny.
But yeah, sometimes they're a little corny and boring as you get older. But and then they get to go on hikes, and I think they canoe at some point. So,
Imogen, I have a question, mm-hmm. which is maybe hard to answer, but we're going to try. How did you get to be so awesome? And here's what I mean by that. It's so not only great to have you in the studio to talk about your story, which we're going to get to in a second, but you're 13 going on 14, mm-hmm. and already I feel very at ease in the studio. You seem very confident. You also seem very comfortable speaking to adults and speaking to anyone. And I'm curious, you said you grew up in Iowa City.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get to be sort of who you are? Did you Were you reading a lot when you were a kid? Were you engaging with people of all kinds through, like you were saying, school? Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, what like are the things you found formative that kind of brought you to where you are right now?
Well, and I think like I feel very lucky to live in Iowa City. So I have two younger sisters. So I think that's like helped me mature a ton. It's like, you know, if my parents go out, it'll be like, okay, Em, you're on babysitting duty. So it'll just be like 2 hours and I'll be there, like maybe make some dinner. It'll be like mac and cheese or something. But I think like Iowa City has a ton of opportunity. So I've danced at like Nolte Academy for like since I think I was like two when I started.
This is great.
And then they've like, I'm heavily involved in like theater programs. So Theater West, I've done a few Young Footlighters, and then Nolte started doing more theater programs last year. So I've just been, you know, connecting through that. And then I've done like youth choir is a big one, ICYC. So that one you get to meet a ton of people. And then I think it's just like clubs and activities, sports. So like I'm a big wrestler. We actually had our last meet.
Awesome.
Yeah, we had our last meet yesterday and it was so much fun. This morning, me and our team, we went to Starbucks actually. Yeah. So
cool.
Such a fun, like, I think it's just, now, you know, being involved.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I have a question. So how on earth do you find time to write?
Like, right. All that stuff. Tell us, because I mean, yeah, no.
That's a lot to be involved in. So where do you, like, how did you get started writing and how do you fit writing into your life?
Well, a lot of it is through like the after school club. That's just, it's a great place and it's, you know, for an hour. So I'm just there 4 to 5 and then I can head off, you know, to like eat a little dinner and then go do something else. But I've been doing it since, so I did it. I've done it this year. I couldn't do it seventh grade because I think I had something else. It was yearbook club is what it was last year. And then they offer it around to like the elementary school. So whenever it's come to Horn, I think in fifth grade and sixth grade, I did it with some of my close friends. And it's just, it's always been something really fun. Like I think language arts is one of my better classes just because I feel more at ease to write than, you know, doing math or something. So.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
What do you like to read? Are you a reader?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very big reader.
We're all very curious after hearing your story, like what you like to read, like, or what have you read sort of in the past that's informed your writing?
So I'm a, like, really big theater person. So, you know, quite some Shakespeare stuff I've read.
What?
Yeah.
Just
well,
a little Shakespeare
it's like,
stuff.
No, yeah. Just like Romeo and Juliet. I really want to read Macbeth just because, like, I don't know. It's such an accomplishment.
It's some of his best stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. Yeah.
And then, or like, I'm currently, I don't know when I'm going to finish it, but for Christmas, I got the book Les Mis, and it's like 1,000 pages. It's super thick.
You don't have
like
to finish it,
so
just
excited.
Carry it around. This is what I did in high school, is just have the book on you.
Is that Victor Hugo? Is that who
it
wrote
is, yeah.
That? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's impressive enough. Just
it's hard to carry it around. It's
yeah, it's
big.
Huge.
You could get a little, like some kind of cart.
Yeah.
No,
it's
on.
So heavy, like brings down my backpack. So.
And were you also, did you like grow up reading, you know, I have nieces who sort of watching them read everything from Harry Potter up through things like Twilight. Were you kind of into those worlds or were you always reading? I mean, and we'll talk about your story in a second. I'm really impressed with your language skills.
Yeah.
And it feels to me like someone who has been reading beyond just sort of like contemporary. Right. So it's interesting to hear you say that you were reading Shakespeare.
Yeah.
So yeah, any other series of books that
I
were?
I think I was like over COVID especially got really into Harry Potter and then, you know, so that was like third grade-esque and it's because my mom said, she was like, I'm not going to let you watch the movies until you read all of the books.
Oh.
So it was like.
Parenting.
You know,
literary.
Yeah.
Mom.
It was
some good parenting right there.
Yeah, right.
She's like a therapist. She loves books so much. Oh. So I think it's like a lot of stuff, you know, so like the Phantom Tollbooth, she was like, I read this when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You'd love it. And so I just like, I read it 2 years ago and like now I really love it and I'll probably show it to my kids as like your grandma read it and then I read it and so now
cool.
You should read it.
That's one of my favorite parts of becoming a parent was just bringing a stack of books into my kid's room and being like, we're going to read The Mixed Up Files of Miss Baisley Frankweiler, then we're going to read Hatchet, then we're going to read Watership Down. It was just like, and we get to talk about all of these things that I've been thinking about for 30 years.
Been waiting for you to come along. Well, how, I mean, So this story, how did this story come into being? Like,
so this isn't, when I was in second grade, I had a recurring nightmare of this happening.
Really?
So I have a huge fear of clowns. I'm like, I think I'm afraid of three big things: clowns, sharks, and electricity. Yeah. Not like lights and stuff, but if there's like a loose wire or something, or they don't put like a mat to cover it, I get terrified I'm gonna get electrocuted.
But you know that, like,
that's smart.
You know that, like, everyone's afraid of clowns though, right?
No, I have so many friends that, like, I think we went to a parade or something, and there was a clown, and I was like looking away. I was like, I can't watch this.
You are,
and
my friend
was
alone.
My friend was like, oh, it's so cute. No, cute?
You're not
like,
alone.
Are you crazy? So, no, I'm
so what
terrified.
Happened in these dreams?
The dreams, it was all, like, so it's essentially just, like, a very, you know, surface level of the plot. It was, like, a family of clowns appeared. There was no, like, storyline. So this one has almost, like, a purpose, and it, you know, kind of develops. This was just, like, a family of clowns one day was in my house and then, like, killed my parents and my sisters, which, like, as a, in second grade, that's terrifying.
It is terrifying. I also, again, I'm just so impressed that you then wrote toward that. Like, right. I'll tell you, my scary nightmares, I don't tell anyone about, and I pretend they're not happening. I certainly don't write about them.
Yeah.
And you've gone the other
way. What are they, Danny?
Well, for another podcast called Danny's Fears, starring Danny and Lauren. I just it's like immersion therapy. You, like, dove into it.
Go towards it.
Had you gotten beyond the fear before writing the story?
I think it was just, like, it was getting around Halloween, and so, like, the story prompt was, oh, the university's having a scary story contest, and, you know, they were like, write about something that's scary for you. Or I think we read, it was like a short scary story, and it was like, oh, the author was, like, inspired by somebody around them had, like, an intense fear or something. So I was like, oh, why don't I write about the scariest thing that has happened to me that would make a good story? And it was this nightmare.
Wow.
Because I think it's also like with the everyone's afraid of clowns, like, there are so many people who I think, oh, if that happened to me, I would, you know, I would be terrified. So I think it just, that specific nightmare, I think, would resonate with a lot of people.
Yeah. Cool. And did you write the piece at writing club, or did you write it at home, or like on a computer or on your phone, or like,
so,
how do you?
Yeah, the beginnings of it were definitely at writing club. Like, I knew I wanted to submit the story, and then I was like halfway done. And my language arts class, it was like, oh, you get to write a short story. It has to be like 2 pages, dialogue, like all that stuff. So this story didn't have any dialogue, and I'm not actually sure it does. But I think for the language arts, I just added like a couple sentences somewhere, and like got it. I got an A+ because
that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
And then I like went back, revised, edited it. You know, ran through a bunch of my friends, and then I can't remember the woman's name, but from the club, she like gave me some suggestions, and then I like submitted it. I did not think I was going to get in. It was more of like a, oh, let's just see how it goes, and now I'm on a podcast. So.
Yeah. And you said that you had a couple friends read it. I love that part of writing and art making where I get to share stuff with people I love. Is that fun for you? Do you have a couple first readers?
Oh, definitely Cora Beeland, as I said, because she's in my language arts class. We've been friends for like 2-3 years. And I think it's just, like, she gives such good feedback. So, like, I can really trust with her, to be honest. Like, she always gives me a positive. So for this one, it was like, oh, like, I like how, you know, you're able to give enough about, like, how my actual family is without, you know, saying outright, like, this is Imogen, this is Agatha, this is Elliot, these are their parents.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then she also gives really good construction and, like, constructive feedback. And then my best friend, Maddie, she's the one that lives, like, block away. So I think she's just, like, always there to, if I need to go over and be like, oh, do you want to read this?
That's so great.
Yeah.
What a great friend. Yeah, yeah.
So one other thing I wanted to ask is, you mentioned before always reading, and you've been doing some writing at Writing Club. You've got this amazing story that I encourage all of our listeners to listen to.
I'll be putting the recording of that story right after our interview here, so listeners can just continue listening when we're done, and it will go right into the recording of your story.
Amazing. And so I guess I'm wondering, are you working on anything now?
So I think now there was, it was like a prompt on like what's something in the world that you would like to change. And a big one for me is like violence in schools. Because, you know, so again, playing off fears, like this is something that is like my sisters are terrified of. And I'm actually like, especially going into high school, I think there was like a big incident that happened at West. And then there's been like bomb and gun threats, like just surrounding our schools and especially in America. So I hope to write like a piece about that. I'm already trying to like do some research to see what I could do. And I'll hopefully if there's like a story prompt submission about something like that. But I don't like, I don't know if there's any real solution to try to do it because it's like taking away, you know, like weapons, but that would, you know, people would still get them illegally. Like it's just,
it's a complicated issue.
Yeah. And I hope to like, that's what I would really hoping to write about. And just, I'm, you know, on the surface, just trying to do research. So hopefully in the next few months, as school wraps up, I can like truly like delve into it.
So do you write, when you've done other kinds of writing, is it mostly in this genre of kind of like horror, scary sort of kinds of stories, or do you write other kinds of things too, or like what are your favorite kinds of things to write?
I really like writing like almost romances, but like it's like romance and then something else is going on. So like I really like writing that, and then a lot of nonfiction stuff. So I mentioned the research, but those are always my favorite things to do, of like, you know, quoting from sources and stuff like that. You know, like in American Size, we had to do something on the Star Spangled Banner, and it was so much fun. I absolutely loved it.
So these are, so like academic writing, and that's incredible.
I think it's just for academic writing, I get some sort of, not even like the validation's the best part, but like knowing that my writing is definitely being read, you know, and definitely being almost appreciated, you know.
But. Do you see yourself continuing to do this, to pursue maybe writing as a career? Do you see yourself applying to the University of Iowa and coming to the Magid Center and
hanging out with us?
We have a romance novel.
There's a new
student
magazine
mag.
Called Venus. Oh. That's a student literary magazine at the University of Iowa that publishes romance.
That's so cool. Yeah.
And there's one, isn't there one also for horror?
Speculative writing. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
There are a ton of these student run publications. They're so good. And it just seems like right up your alley. So I'm recruiting you. What?
Okay. So it's fine. So I can't, I just feel like we have to go back for a second and talk about your prose style, which Danny sort of mentioned. But the thing that astonished me about your story is the prose style, the prose is so assured and confident and poised. And it also has this sort of, I don't want to say antiquated, may be the wrong word, but it's very kind of formal, the way you tell the story. You have a certain kind of formal voice. And I just wonder, I mean, it was magnificent. I'm just wondering where that came from. Like,
I think it was really just to balance out the absurdity of, like, the smart. Actual. You know, if you were to write it, I think if I were to have written it and not as formal or as, you know, upper class of the tone that I used, it would have sounded not like immature, but kind of, or like inappropriate for the situation. Cause like, it's a terrible, what happens in the story is it's not good by any means. And it's quite scary, but I think, you know, the absurd, like of having the clowns like come into the house and like, that just, it doesn't have the same, you know, impact as it would have had with a much less formal tone, or, you know, if I'd used not as up, you know, lifting language for the story. I think it wouldn't have had the same impact, and it would have sounded a lot like I was not as professional, I think.
No, I mean,
did it come out just naturally, or when you began writing it, or did you have to go back and sort of, you know, calibrate the tone a little bit, or did it just kind of come out that way?
I think it was, because it was like doing a rough draft, and it was kind of like a, this should happen and then this should happen, and all like put it all together. And it did not have the same impact. And then I wrote the first little bit of like, oh, the story that we're, or like the first little bit, I honestly can't remember how it goes, but it's like, the story I'm about to tell you is a most depressing tale or something like that. And I think it just, you know, started with that and then just kept going on and on and on. And I couldn't stop because it would have sounded weird and out of place in the writing. So
it's impressive to me that you can also pinpoint it, because you're exactly right. Steve and I were talking about this before. It is, the language is assured. And it is written in a way that avoids something that I think you could have fallen into, which is either cliche or using humor to try to like add too much levity. Mm-hmm. It is a, like you give the sense to the reader, this is a serious tone. And so I think the formal language choices that you made help set that up. And you're right. It's right from the beginning mm-hmm. that we're in that voice and we never mm-hmm. question it. And I'm just so impressed with the story. And I really encourage everyone to stick around and listen to it because it's it was fascinating and frightening.
Yeah,
frightening. One other final question we have, if you're interested, is if you were going to, I don't know, is this a good question or should we just wrap it up?
I don't know what the question is, so I can't judge it yet.
The question is, if you were going to write a story from the point of view of any animal.
Oh, yeah, that's a good question.
What animal would it be and why?
So I think I might be a little biased on this. Panda bears are my favorite animal.
Yeah,
I love them so much. And we're actually, for spring break, we're going to Washington, D.C., which only zoo in America that has pandas as of now. We saw, I think when I was 10, like right before COVID like actually happened, we went to see them in Atlanta. They're gone now. Never got to see them when they were in San Diego. So I'm super excited. We're going on my birthday. So I think just from the perspective of like, pandas have gone through so much, like they're extremely endangered. So if it was like before they started to get endangered, just delving into like how exactly that would have, they're not very fast and they're
pretty clumsy.
Sounds like a panda would make a really interesting main character.
And then, or just like maybe like a house cat that got lost or something like that. Just like, you know, if it was to be just like a simple, sweet short story. You know, something like that. I know there's so many out there, but
maybe you can start research on that during spring break.
Yeah, panda.
Imogen, it has been so great to talk with you. We in the Magid Center really appreciate your work. The story is so wonderful. Listeners, stick around to hear it. And please know how grateful we are to have had you join us in the studio today. Keep writing. Thank you for all you've done.
Thanks, Imogen.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This has been such an amazing experience.
We hope you enjoyed the interview. And now, here's the story.
One clown is scary enough, but a whole family of them? Living under the roof with you? Who could survive that? Find out in our next story, The Circus is Coming, by Imogen Olszewski, read by Alice Eberhardt.
The house in question appeared to any passing stranger as if it were another abandoned home. And while it was, the reason no person could ever live there was quite peculiar. Few people know the full story, having only heard bits and pieces over the years. I am very well versed in this tale, for I was there throughout its unfolding. From the time they stepped through the door until the last kill and the end of any living in that house. That poor family. My poor family. Before any tragedy occurred, there lived a family, perfectly ordinary, a mother, a father, and three young girls. We had lived in peace, simply existing. My mother had a therapy practice, and my father was a chef. My parents catered to our needs and knew when to refuse, though with an 8-, 6-, and 4-year-old, it must have been difficult. We had everything we needed and then some. We were just simply living, well and in comfort. I couldn't have predicted it for how strange a situation it put us in. They had come so suddenly, it felt as if I had gone on a walk and gotten lost, one wrong turn and I was taken into a different world of horror and despair. The most unfortunate realization I have made upon reflection on this event is that they were painfully alike to my family, a mother, father, and three children. We had an extra room in the basement, and my parents, too kind for their own good, let them stay. They moved their things neatly, with very little disturbance to our daily lives. Before I tell you of the terrible acts committed by these creatures, I'd like to mention their strange quirk. To put it simply, they were clowns, draped in black and orange with faces with permanent smiles. Their faces terrorized me in my nightmares, and when I would wake up, the nightmare wouldn't end. Slowly, they began to gain my family's trust. The fathers would cook, the mothers would talk, and us children would play. My parents would gush to their friends about how wonderful it was to live with clowns. My sisters would brag to their classmates about how everything seemed funnier with them around. I, however, was not as trusting. They always seemed to be hiding something in their room.
Whenever I would venture into the basement to play with my dolls, I would hear strange, haunting laughter, the kind that brings a shiver down your spine and makes the room automatically go colder. In the month of their stay, a series of odd packages were delivered to the house. We could never look at their contents before they were swept away to the downstairs room. The clowns had been in the residence for almost a month and a half when horror struck. Grandfather, who had a history of medical problems in the past, had fallen ill and was to be treated at the hospital near our house in a month. When told this news, my parents faced the issue of what to do with the clowns. I proposed that we move them to the apartments down the street. I reasoned that they couldn't possibly stay when the grandparents came. In truth, I also wanted them out of the house as soon as possible. My lovely parents, with heavy hearts, told the clowns, and to my surprise, the clowns were oddly calm. I would have expected a bit of anger or hurt, but they complied with our wishes. In the next week, we were to help them move into their new home. This meant going into that god-awful room. As I stepped down the stairs, I was curious about what I would find in their room. For there were clowns, and a blank room would never be satisfactory. Turning the corner, I stopped abruptly. What was this? Surely not our guest room, for the black and orange striped walls were ugly and tacky for a suburban home. Their beds stood against one wall following the same color scheme. They ranged from a comically large bed for the father to a silly little one for the youngest child. Scattered throughout the room were dark cardboard boxes full of their things. Soon my parents joined me in the room as we each picked up a box to haul upstairs. I first grabbed one that was the appropriate size for an 8-year-old and made my way upstairs. As I reached the top step and turned to look back at my parents, I was shoved down to the floor and made to watch as the mother pulled out a key and locked the door to the basement. Familiar footsteps walked up the stairs to the locked door. The knob twisted but didn't open. I could hear my parents confusedly talking, trying to find a way to open the door. They called out to me and my sisters, even to the clowns. Then, the screams. I'll never forget the pleading and begging of my parents' last words. The despair that filled me knowing I would never see my parents again was debilitating. I started to sob and break down, but then the thought of my younger sisters, upstairs. If they could kill my parents, why stop there? My heart racing, I raced up the stairs. I turned the corner just in time to see the youngest two clowns stab knives in the backs of my little sister. I screamed in shock, grief, and utter hatred. These monsters took away my family. As I was in the haze of sadness, the remaining clowns gleefully stalked up the stairs to join their family. Realizing that my family was dead, but they could still be together, broke me from my grieving trance and brought me into a fit of rage. How could they ruin everything I love and still have each other? How dare they? Blinded by anger and their taunting laughs, I quickly stumbled towards them, but they seemed to have dissolved into thin air. I tripped into my bedroom, landing on my bed, spinning around in fury to see the five of them standing there, smile upon their faces. Sickeningly real. I tried to step off my bed, to run to them, to put them into the state that I was, to kill their family, their kids. But as I stepped, I looked down and the ground was gone. The floor seemed to have disappeared and turned into a bottomless pit of darkness. I grabbed a nearby blanket and sheets and scrambled up onto the bed. Once I was safe, I looked around and found my room was gone. I was sitting on my bed in the middle of nothingness, sad, confused, and alone. Finally, I gave up. I let all the emotions of the past hour hit me like a train. I sobbed, screamed, and threw my body around in emotion. When I settled down, they came back, or their heads did. The heads floated around my bed, spinning faster and faster while laughing their cruel laugh. It didn't occur to me in the state I was in, but there was only four of the five there. That would have been helpful seeing as what came next. The smallest clown, barely to my hip. When she was first carried in, as skeptical as I was of her family, I couldn't help but coo inwardly. Now, there was nothing cute about her. With the same eerie grin as the rest of her family, she giggled in sync with her mother. She reached out and touched my shoulder and said something or other. Between the laughing, the spinning, and the beat of my heart drumming in my ears, I have no idea what she said. All I can assume, as crazy as it sounds, was that she apologized before pulling me into a hug. As we parted, she shoved me back with a shocking amount of force. I fell backward, off my bed, into the abyss. For the first time in my life, death didn't scare me. I had no fear of what would happen when I hit the ground, if that ever happened. As the clowns at my bed became a speck in the distance, I finally was at peace. I would be seeing my family soon. The end.
And here's our next author. Today we have in the studio Olivia Groff, who's the author of a story called The Forest Shadow, which won one of the awards in the Ghosts on the Radio short story contest sponsored by the Iowa Youth Writing Project. And we are so excited to have her in the studio today. Olivia Groff, welcome to the podcast.
Hey.
Hello. Here, it's our gentle applause.
So maybe, Olivia, you could tell us a little bit about yourself.
I go to City High, and I'm 15 years old, I'm a freshman, and I really like the color purple. If you need to give you like personality trait, it would probably be sits in bedroom too long and likes purple. So,
do you wear a lot of purple? Like, do you have a lot of purple clothing, or like, how does that purple love manifest?
Yeah, is your room
sort
purple?
Of like?
I do have a lot of purple things in my room. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm growing my collection of purple clothing. I don't have, as you can see, what I'm wearing right now.
Right.
Entirely black.
You're black. Very stylish, yeah.
I don't have, like, a plethora of purple clothing, but I have a couple of good things. Yes, I'm in English 9 Honors. Also, I'm a part of the City High Review, which is an art and literary magazine at City High.
Very nice.
So we, like, take submissions and edit them. Well, we don't edit them, but we, like, judge them and then decide if they're going to go in the final product. And right now we have a website, just City High Review.
Yeah, we'll link to that.
Cool, yeah.
Sure.
For sure.
That's amazing. I have a singular poem in there that I wrote. Messed up the formatting.
Oh,
okay.
You know, that's a given.
It's
welcome to being a poet.
You're among poets here, so.
We know about formatting being messed up.
Olivia, earlier you said you love purple, and also if there was another trait, it would be sort of like staying in your room too much.
Yeah.
So I always think about this as writers. Are you like, when you're in your room all that time, are you writing and reading? Are those things that are part of your life all the time? Is that how you're kind of spending your time?
Yeah, definitely. I actually just finished reading Lord of the Rings for the first time. Yeah.
That's a big one.
Yeah, it was.
The whole trilogy or four books?
The whole trilogy plus The Hobbit.
Wow.
It was definitely really good, very life-changing. I loved it very much. And I spent a lot of my time reading like other things in there too. And, you know, occasionally I'll tinker around on my laptop for a little bit, you know, just little snippets of stuff I come up with.
So you write on your laptop?
Yes, and on my phone, I don't have my laptop.
Do you write in the Notes app on your phone?
Like, I have Google Docs on my phone, but I used to do that.
Okay.
But now I have Google Docs.
This is wild to
me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, when I started writing, I did not have a phone and to watch Magnus. Like, Magnus will have, like, chapters on the Notes app. And I'm just like, wait, what? My kid.
Is it all like thumb typing or do you dictate or like how do you?
I mostly thumb type because I do not trust the dictation.
Yeah.
It does not ever get it right.
Yeah.
So my dad actually complains all the time about how AI cannot take over the world if it's this stupid and it has to be lying to us.
Yeah.
Or like pretending to be stupid so he can take over the world or something. I don't know. He said that all the time. And he's right. The dictation is stupid.
It is bad, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So usually I type. Even the autocorrect gets me sometimes. Like, I'll be writing out the name of some fictional character or whatever from some anime, and it'll autocorrect like the weirdest thing ever.
Yeah.
And it's just so annoying, but at the same time, it can be really funny.
Do you have your own OCs? Is that what it's called?
I do.
Which means?
What does it mean?
It stands for original character.
Original character.
Nice.
So you create OCs, right?
Yeah.
And then you create stories with them.
Yeah.
So the OC is an OC that goes with an existing story, like, or something, or with a new story?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Sometimes people just like to make characters for the sake of making characters, not always a story surrounding them.
Got it.
Oftentimes people make characters and then give them huge elaborate tragic backstories and stuff. Okay. It's actually online, it's a very long running joke that people's OCs have just, people just love beating up their OCs with a stick.
So much lore.
Yeah.
Wow.
I definitely have a couple of my own. I have a couple that I just input into any story I'm thinking about. That I just take the character design and the vague personality and stitch them together into a new character.
Wow. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Other times I just make random ones for whatever story. So it really depends on this.
So for this story, how did this story come about? I mean, there was a contest. There was a prompt, or
was this one of your OCs?
I was going to say, this one of your OCs? Or
it was.
Right, The Forest Shadow is the name of the story.
So the main character's name is Macy, and Macy is a name that I like to use for characters a lot. I like the name Macy, and I wrote the story for the contest because I looked at it because I already won a previous contest of a similar vein, and I was like, I want to do that again. So I was like, why not? Let's just, write something. And it took me like a solid week to come up with a good one. I had so many weird first drafts of different stories. Macy actually had like a companion in the earlier drafts.
Whoa.
But I cut it. I did not have it. I honestly forgot the name of the person, but I cut.
It's gone.
I cut them out. They no longer exist. Macy's now a loner.
Do you remember why you cut the other character out? Was it like a sort of artistic reason? Or
I wanted to avoid being too similar to my inspiration for the story.
Oh, nice. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So what was the inspiration?
Are you allowed to tell us?
Yes, I will. It probably, if you've seen the show, you'll definitely be able to see aspects of it in the story. I was inspired by the cartoon Over the Garden Wall because I had just finished watching it when I was writing this story, and I was like, I want to do that. So the early drafts were definitely very similar, but I was looking at it, I was like, this is too similar. So I changed some things around, and honestly, I liked the final product a lot more, but I was definitely like, it was like the night of the deadline when I was typing the last sentences, so it was very close.
That's amazing. One of my friends, Amalia, was a writer on that show.
Really? That's so cool.
So, and she applied to the workshop, and we're hoping that she gets in.
Oh, yeah.
So did you write multiple drafts of the story? Like, is that something, so you actually wrote a draft and then went back and worked on it, or?
Mostly what I did is I started writing a draft. I tried to have like a loose plot in my head, but then also let the story guide me as it goes. And I had a loose draft, and I would reread it and be like, this sucks, and then delete it and start something different.
I wouldn't know what that's like.
And then I would start something different. And actually what I ended up doing for this one is because this had to be typed, I think it had to be typed in a Word document. Mm-hmm. So I don't have Word on my phone. So I wrote the original on my phone. Then I went over it, and as I was retyping it onto my family computer, because at that time I did not have a laptop of my own, so I was retyping it on the family computer. And I was like, this is helping me with my, like, edit my writing so much. Yeah. Just going through and rewriting it. Yeah. So I started doing that for my other things a lot more, too. So I think I'm going to have deleted that first draft to save storage on my phone. But I do still have, like, a copy of the one that I wrote down on the computer. So.
That's so cool. Interesting. So after you typed it up on the family computer, did you just send it in, or did you read it out loud to your family? Did you have anybody else read it? What is that process like for you creatively before you sort of push something out into the world?
For this one, I read it aloud to my family, because this was a story that was meant, that was like, you're supposed to write it to be written aloud in the Ghost in the Radio podcast. So I definitely read it aloud to them. I tweaked a few things after that, but then I definitely sent it out. Usually when I write things, I do not have my family do it. Usually I have a friend do it, or sometimes I'll go online and be like, hey, I need a beta reader who's willing.
I have
a separate email that I use actually for my Google Docs, just to make sure, because when you go onto Reddit and you say, hey, beta reader, you wanna make sure you're not inviting anyone, like, anyone bad onto here.
You are blowing our collective mind.
You have it all figured out.
Right,
you're so advanced.
So when you sat down earlier, you were talking about being involved in the school's literary journal, and you're only a freshman, correct?
I am a freshman, yes.
So, like, that to me is amazing. I meant that to sound like I was impressed, because not only is the writing of the story so great, but your commitment to literature and writing, you're reading Lord of the Rings, you're writing on your phone and on the family computer, you're revising, you're reading out loud, and you know enough to go into the world and ask for other people's opinions. And there's an avenue where you can do that. When we were growing up, there wasn't a space where you could do that. Even if there was, I'm not sure I would have had the confidence to invite someone else in. It's really incredible to me, and a sign of your maturity and talent, that you're like, not only do you have another email address, so you're not like inviting sort of chaos, but also you're saying, I want and I respect feedback. That's such a great place to be.
I love feedback, actually, because I'm sure you all can relate to this, but I don't think very highly of my own writing. I look at it and I go, here are all the tiny flaws that I've found after staring at this screen for like 5 hours.
Very relatable. Relatable.
So I love feedback. It's really not all that scary for me, because honestly, it's easier for me to have strangers read my writing than people I know, because if a stranger decides that they hate my writing and would like to poop all over it, you know,
hey, they have the wrong email address.
That's exactly, and that's whatever. It doesn't affect my life if a stranger doesn't like my writing. But like, but if I give it to my friend and they don't like it, it's suddenly like, oh, my friend doesn't like my writing. Like, and you get a little bit, you know, stabbed in the heart a little.
Yeah.
So it's really not all that scary. And especially because in the spaces I go, people there, like, I have read snippets online of people writing, like, Thor x Frozen fan fiction. Like, it is, it is the Wild West out there sometimes. everyone understands, like, that sometimes you're going to write something really bad, sometimes you're going to write something really good, sometimes you're going to write something just because you want to, self-indulgence. There are definitely spaces out there where people will, you know, pick apart your writing and judge it and be very critical. But there are also places where they will just be understanding and not do that. Mm-hmm. So I like frequent those places more.
Because yeah.
We learned about web novels from a previous interview.
Web novels? Novels.
Yeah.
Web novels.
We know what you mean.
Are more comics, kind of. They have lots of pictures.
Okay.
I think.
And they come out as chapters or?
Yes, you go chapter by chapter with those. There's also fan fiction, which has kind of a bad rap and a bad connotation among the wider world, I know. But I've definitely read some really, really good fanfics out there. And they also go chapter by chapter, typically.
Yeah.
I really like the chapter by chapter format because you can keep your readers in suspense. And also, I like being able to put author's notes and be like, hi, I'm not dead.
Yeah.
I know I left this fanfic for like 5 months because I got hit with the bus or something crazy that. I don't know. It's fun.
No, I think a lot of young writers get started writing fanfiction. I mean, it's just such an easy way to kind of get in, and you can stay there or you can evolve and you can go back. But it's just, I just think a lot of young people start that way, and it's fun.
And if you suck, people will still read your work. Like, there are people out there who see, like, they have a favorite relationship in media. They will see this relationship and they'll be like, I will consume every piece of media to do with this relationship that's out there. And so if you're writing, like, there are a couple things people don't like. You have to have at least decent grammar. Like, it has to be understandable. And people really hate when you have big blocks of just text with no paragraph break. People really hate that. Mm. But if your writing is not, like, you know, super eloquent, people will still read that because they like the trope or they like the characters or they like the relationship in there. So that's why I like fanfiction a lot, because it's so chill. If you do a horrible job, if your writing is literally just a piece of poop, you can just set it out there. People will still read it, and it's...
What's some of your favorite fanfic to read?
Oh, I don't know how I'm supposed to respond to this. Well, there's this specific... It's called, like, kind of like a tag. You know how you, like, will tag things on, like, social media?
Yeah.
Like, hashtag this. On the specific site that I use called AO3, Archive of Our Own, it's... You use tags like to refresh it was in the fic. I like reading lots of fluff, which basically means happiness forever.
Aww. Mm.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's also angst, which means beat with a stick. Yeah.
So you can just type in angst and get those stories.
Oh, yeah, like you can.
Danny, you would have loved that.
I would have loved it as a kid.
Yeah, there are so many different fandoms and characters. There are millions of fics on there.
Yeah. Okay.
Fics is short for fanfic.
Fics.
Wow. Millions. There's so many. I even have a couple on there.
So another question then that I have, as you're talking about fanfiction and talking about your story, how did you get into writing? Like, were you, when you first started reading, did you jump immediately from reading into writing? Or is this something that sort of came later in your life?
Well, I've always been very imaginative. I like spending lots of time in my own head. And because I read a lot as a child, I read a lot of books, I found that writing came very naturally to me. Obviously, my first things I wrote were not very good, but they were better than the things my peers were writing, so it definitely gave me a bit of a confidence boost. So how I specifically got into writing itself is that I was already, like, you know, beginning to enter the internet area. When I heard of this thing called fanfiction where you could write stories about your favorite characters, I was like, this is exactly what I want. So, and then I've definitely started branching out into more original fiction now. I still write a lot of fan fiction sometimes, but I also write original fiction, and I have lots of ideas, and it kind of just came as a natural following to reading a lot as a child, because to be a good writer, you have to be a good reader, because reading is how you learn what to do, what not to do.
Yeah, you have to read a lot.
And you said that you just wrote a poem that you got published, so you're writing fanfic, you're writing original fic, you're writing poetry. Are there any types of writing, academic writing, nonfiction writing, that you don't like? Or are you kind of into all of it?
Those two things.
Oh. Yeah.
I dislike nonfiction very much. I already learn enough in my life. If I want to read something, I want to get something I can really get lost in with characters I can enjoy. You know, I don't like... I want to be the next Tolkien. That's what I want to be.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Well, good for you.
I want to reinvent an entire literary genre. I want to be famous forever.
There you go.
That's what I want. I want people...
Big dreams.
Yeah, I was telling this to my mom in the car, actually, that maybe the fame and the money would be very nice, but I want to be famous because I want to see what readers do with my characters.
Yeah. Oh.
I want to see people write bad fan fiction and have bad takes and have headcanons that make no sense. Headcanon is like, this could be canon. It's not stated, but it could be. Anyway.
Do you guys know what canon means?
Kind of.
It means canon is what the source material is.
It's like the truth of the lore.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, got it.
Yes. I want to see people, like, look at my work and we'll see. I want to see how they interpret my work. I want to be able to interact with my fans and have fans interact with. I want to see what people think. More interviews like this one where I can talk about my intents with my writing, and I can talk about, like, you know, just like, I want to be famous, then I can see what people do with my work.
You're
in the right spot. You're in Iowa City.
That's good.
So people come from all over the world to become writers here.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, Stephen has a program that you can apply for, and there's other programs out there here in town, and you're surrounded by writers who are doing exactly this.
Yeah.
So.
I consider myself very lucky to be born here. Out of everywhere in Iowa, I was born here.
I know.
I consider myself very, very lucky to be part of this city. I love this city very much.
Yeah, we do too. We're all very happy to live here.
Yeah.
Olivia, one final question. If you could tell your younger self when you were first starting to read and write sort of about what you're doing now, what would you say to that younger sort of you?
I think I would say, stop watching Gotcha Life. Start writing your own stories. Start doing it sooner so you can get better faster. That's what I would say.
Wow.
Also, don't procrastinate.
Right.
Procrastination is the worst illness you can get.
Sounds like you get a lot done, though. Sounds like you do a lot of writing.
It sure does.
Yes, I do.
More writing than I'm doing.
Correct.
Yes.
Well, Olivia, thank you so much for joining us on Sad Me of the Past.
Great.
Thank you so much, Olivia. We hope you enjoyed the interview. And now, here's the story.
The Forest's Shadow, by Olivia Groff, read by Skylar Tarnas, is our next haunting story. What lingers in the forest at the village edge? What keeps children and huntsmen alike terrified of setting foot beyond the tree line?
Once there was an ancient forest in a long-forgotten land, near a small village with paranoid villagers who loved to talk. There are shadowy monsters in the forest, the curious children said. Eat your dinner or the monsters will get you, the exhausted mothers said.
Don't go near that forest, it's cursed, the skilled hunters said.
Yes, it seemed every soul in this village was terrified of what lurked beyond the trees. Except for a young Macy Oakes, an adventurous girl who didn't believe a single word of what the adults said. She eyed the edge of the forest with skepticism and didn't cower under the covers when a distant howl echoed through the night. One day, during a sunny autumn afternoon, Macy was playing with the children in the street when they began to talk about the forest, as they tended to do.
I heard the edibles there have oil for blood, and eating them will kill you, one of the children said.
Macy rolled her eyes.
I heard when they tried to cut down the trees, ghosts came flying out and chased away the lumbermen, another child said.
Macy scoffed.
Well, I heard that there are witches in the forest that lure and eat bad kids, a third child said.
Macy laughed out loud. The children paused and turned to stare at her.
Those are just stories, Macy said, crossing her arms. Parents just tell them to get you to listen. The forest is just a creepy forest that the scaredy cats refuse to go near.
There was silence for a moment while Macy's words sunk in. The children looked at her like she was crazy, but Macy didn't back down.
Here, I'll prove it, she said.
And so she marched down the street to the grassy no man's land between the village and the forest. The gaggle of children followed curiously. The trees were much taller up close. Their branches, aflame with the reds and golds of late fall, reached towards the sky like spindly fingers, and their trunks were so wide it would take five people to fully wrap around them. Macy took a deep breath to steady her nerves.
Here I go, she said,
and took a single cautious step forward. She passed the first tree slowly, listening to the soft crunch of leaves and twigs beneath her feet. The tree roots were large enough to jump on like stepping stones, and so she did just that, giggling. The aging sunlight filtered down, creating little spotlight patterns on the forest floor. Birds chirped overhead, and squirrels chased each other through the treetops. The forest was much prettier on the inside, Macy realized. See? She shouted, balancing on a particularly gnarled root. It's not so bad. But as she turned around to invite the other kids to come play with her, she realized she couldn't see the edge of the forest. Hello? She asked in confusion. She hadn't really gone so far, had she? She spun in all directions, peering through the tight gaps between tree trunks, but no matter where she looked, she couldn't see the sky. Is anyone there? She cried. The sun was beginning to set, and before she knew it, the forest was painted in gray-blue darkness. Panic set in as she wandered, knowing she would not survive for long away from her warm house and dry bed with nothing to eat or drink. Macy stumbled into a small grassy clearing and shivered as a breeze swept through, rattling the tree branches like dry bones. The forest was much less inviting at night. Something brushed the back of her neck, making the hairs there stand up. Macy turned around and screamed. Standing above her was a shadow taller than any adult in the village, with long, spindly fingers and eyes glowing like full moons. Macy scrambled away, breathing hard, but before she could get far, she tripped over an invisible tree root. The shadow loomed above her, unblinking, as it reached a bony hand towards her, closer and closer until it grabbed onto her arm with a deathly cold grip and pulled her to her feet. "Oh my goodness, are you okay?" it asked, dusting her off. "I'm so sorry for scaring you. Are you lost?" Macy looked at it in confusion. It seemed much smaller now than before. I'm okay, she mumbled, shaking. Another breeze blew past her, warmer this time, like when you opened the door to a cozy building in the middle of winter. Now, are you lost out here? The shadow asked again, tilting its head like a curious puppy. It blinked slowly. I am, yes, Macy said. There was a short, silent pause before she blurted, Are you going to suck my soul out of my nostrils? The shadow startled, taken aback, and then laughed. What? No, of course not, it said in between giggles. That's just a story I spread around to keep people away from my forest. Can't have them destroying it like they do with all the others, you know? Macy relaxed. She'd been right all along. The forest wasn't dangerous at all, and the only shadow monster here was friendly. It just wanted to keep its home safe, like she did. I won't tell anyone, she said, miming zipping her lips closed. Your secret is safe with me. The shadow's eyes crinkled a little like it was smiling. That's a relief. I was a little worried. Now come on, this is the way out of the forest. And as the full moon rose over the horizon, it led Macy away, further into the dark.
And here's our next author. Today we have in the studio Anya Maharjan, who is the author of a story called How the Blood Dragon Was Born. And she is one of the winners of the Iowa Youth Writing Project's Ghosts on the Radio, a short story contest. Anya, we're so happy to have you here today. Thanks so much for coming in and talking to us.
And could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
My name is Anya. I go to Horn School Elementary. I'm 10 years old and I'm from Nepal. Now I live in Iowa City for 2023.
What grade are you in again? Sixth grade at Horn?
Fourth grade.
Oh, fourth grade. Okay. You're already right at a really, really high level, so very impressed.
When did you start writing, Anya?
When I was, like, I got interested by dragons about how they fly and breathe fire.
Oh, cool. So you got interested because of dragons. And did you decide that you wanted to write a story about a dragon, or had you been reading about dragons, or how did it all happen?
I have been reading dragon books when I was in second grade through fourth grade.
What do you think, what is the most interesting thing about a dragon?
That they can fly, or they can't because of their wings.
Right, right.
And you said that part of this world was inspired by Minecraft.
Yeah.
So do you play Minecraft then?
No, I watch Minecraft.
You watch it. Okay. And Minecraft's a lot like writing, where you just build a world, right? You just come up with your own place
house.
And time and house, all of that. Yeah, online you can watch other people playing video games.
Right.
And for me too, I'm not good at video games, but I enjoy watching other people play who are good and getting to see what they create.
I also play Roblox and play Dragon Games.
Oh, Dragon.
You play Dragon Games? Which ones do you play?
It's like a Dragon Life, but you can be a dragon.
Really?
Yourself, and you can be from an egg to adult and elder.
So a lot of these games are like kind of character world. So tell us about how you wrote your story. Did you write it all in one sitting? Did you sort of think of it for a while and then write it? Like, how did it come into being?
I just write. I can't find a name, and then I just took it from a story, and then I made it Dragon Girls. Do you know, read that book? When a girl is going somewhere and hears the music called Magic Forest, Hear My Roar, and then they will be turned into a dragon and go to a magical place.
So in this story, the girl is in the woods and she kind of is wandering around and she eats some berries, right? How did you come up with that idea?
Because berries is the worst part. I hate berries.
Oh, you don't like berries? One of my favorite things too about your story that's really striking is when she turns into a dragon, she doesn't realize she's turned into a dragon, but she goes up to a pond, right? Or a lake in the woods,
yeah.
And she's looking down into the water, and she sort of slowly discovers, it's first in the reflection, right? She kind of discovers who she is by sort of looking. She notices her sort of, I think it's her head first, but then she notices her claws, and she turns and sees a snake-like tail. It was a really exciting, it's so well described when she's turning into a dragon. Was that part hard to write?
No.
You just saw it in your head, right? And you just wrote it down?
Yeah.
So were you writing this story in class? Did you write it at home? Where were you writing?
I was in writing class and found a name and started writing my first sentence.
Oh.
And then the class was over, so I came home and did it.
Do you write in your bedroom? Do you write at your kitchen table? Do you have a special place you like to write?
I write it in my kitchen table.
Oh, okay.
Cool.
So you can write when other people are around you? Can you concentrate? What's that?
No.
You
have to be alone at the kitchen.
Especially my baby sister.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you can't. So kitchen table's okay, but it has to be kind of quiet. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah,
Most of the time, my dad's at his working space.
Okay.
My mom is upstairs.
Okay.
Doing something with my baby sister.
So do you think that you would continue this story? Do you think you'll write some more? Would you continue this story, or maybe write a different story? Or what do you think you would want to
write? A different story.
A different story? Yeah. With a different character or the same character?
Same character, they meet together.
Ooh, I love it.
So
it could be like a series. Now, what color is your character? What does your dragon have? What color are the scales?
The scales are bloody red.
Ooh.
Bloody red.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought maybe the berries were. I was wondering what color the berries were. I'm not sure it's said.
Blueberry.
They're blueberries. Okay. Don't like blueberries? Oh, okay. What about do you like to read? Are you a reader, or do you feel like most of your inspiration from writing comes from other things?
I read most of the time.
Yeah. What do you like to read?
Dragon Girls. Anything Dragon Pixel.
Yeah. Tell us about what's Dragon Girls.
Dragon Girls is when a girl, there's a girl in a random place, like her home, at school, at a concert, or anything place else. They do stuff, and then they hear the music, but their mothers and fathers don't.
Okay.
The tree queen is calling for them in the magical place.
Yeah.
in the forest. That author also wrote the Dragon Games.
Dragon Games.
Okay, okay. I've never met anyone who knows so much about, who's so thoroughly immersed in dragons.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, yeah, that's so cool. Well, one question I was going to ask you, and I think I already know the answer, is that if you were going to write, well, what do you think you would write next? If it would be about dragons, you think?
It would be like a snake or an eagle.
Another different animal.
Yeah.
Would they be interacting with a dragon or?
Like it's something about a dragon, which they, all three animals mixed can be a dragon.
Oh, nice. Cool. So they like become a dragon together.
Can you think of, would there, like if you were going to send them on some kind of an adventure, do you have any sort of sense of what you'd like them to do or to encounter out there in your world?
The eagle has the ability to fly, as the lizard has the ability to climb, as the snake has either to glide, climb, then squeeze into tiny spaces.
Oh, wow.
So they're like as a group, they have so many powers.
So wait, this is kind of blowing my mind. So is this, are you saying that the animals will be separate sometimes with their individual powers, but then they can also combine into a dragon form?
Yeah, they don't really make a dragon, but they stack each other to make a dragon.
That's okay. So cool.
Wow. Wow.
I love
That's
it.
Really amazing.
They carry the snake and the lizard, and the lizard can use its legs to crawl anywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
And the snake can, like, hiss. Like, when a dragon hiss, it scares away most of the dangerous
animals. Where does the fire breathing come from? Is that just sort of like something that just flows into dragonness, not from any animal?
I feel like that'd be like the snake, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe the snake would be the fire breathing component?
That's just wild.
Are there any animals that actually fire breathe?
I don't know.
No.
No, not yet.
Not that we know of.
The trickster.
Oh, the trickster. See?
Nice. Nice.
So do you think that you'll keep writing? Do you like it enough to you see in your that as you grow up, you'll continue writing, making stories?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Have you shown other people your writing, like your friends or your family?
I saw it to my teacher.
Oh, yeah. Good.
That's great.
Is that fun to share it with someone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you a member of any like little writing groups or clubs, or do you know anyone else who writes at your school?
Two students that in my class goes to writing club.
Oh, cool. Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah,
one of those students left writing club.
Oh.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, hopefully writing club will hold on.
Well, thank you so much for coming in and speaking with us and talking to us about the story that you wrote. And we're gonna put the audio recording of the story on right after this so people can stay on the podcast and then hear your story.
Yeah, Anya, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast and for being with us today. It's been really a pleasure. We hope you enjoyed the interview. And now, here's the story.
Next, we discover how the Blood Dragon was born. This story of transformation is written by Anya Mahajan and read by Olivia Morrow.
Once upon a time, there was a girl named Tilly. One day, Tilly and her parents went camping. Tilly was just sitting inside her tent when she heard a sound from the woods. She was curious, so she followed the sound into the woods. In some time, Tilly found out what was making the sound. It was an owl. As Tilly turned around to go back to her tent, she couldn't see her tent or her parents. Tilly felt scared and tired. She fell asleep, but the cold winds woke her up. Tilly was hungry, but she found a bush full of berries. Tilly happily ate all the berries she could. Tilly was so full, she fell in a deep sleep. The next day, Tilly felt strange. When she went to the nearby pond and she looked into the water, she saw the reflection of a dragon. The dragon's color was blood red. That almost frightened her. Tilly looked down and saw instead of hands, she had claws. She turned her head and saw a big snake-like tail. She turned her head to the side. She saw she had two big wings.
She wanted to try out her new wings. Tilly flapped her new wings again and again. And as she did that again and again, she went up and up and up. She was over the trees. Tilly saw her home and started to make her way to her home. When she reached her home, she called her parents, "Mom, Dad!" Her parents came running outside and were terrified when they saw her. They called, "Blood Dragon!" Tilly felt sad and left her home and hid forever.
And here's our next author.
Well, today we are going to be speaking with Lucy Liao and Natalie Witt, two winners of the Iowa Youth Writing Project's Ghosts on the Radio, a short story contest. Lucy and Natalie hail from the Iowa City area and were kind enough to join us in the studio today. Their tale of ghosts and monsters and the stories of seven of their peers aged 9 to 14 were dramatized and published in Ghosts on the Radio, a haunted audio anthology. This audio anthology, is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you are listening now. Ghosts on the Radio, a short story contest, is the creation of Gwyneth Forsyth, the Associate Director of the Iowa Youth Writing Project. The Iowa Youth Writing Project is a volunteer-powered outreach organization founded by University of Iowa Writers Workshop graduates and based at the University of Iowa. They provide one-of-a-kind writing, publishing, and creative learning opportunities to Iowa's children and teens for little to no cost, thanks to the generosity of community members, partnerships with local organizations and institutions, and the time, energy, and creativity of the Iowa Youth Writing Project volunteers. To learn more about the Iowa Youth Writing Project, Ghosts on the Radio, and upcoming events and writing opportunities, go to iywp.org.
And we will include that link in the description, too, for this podcast.
We will. Lucy, Natalie, welcome to the pod. It's so exciting to have you guys here.
Hi.
So we really want to talk to you today about this wonderful story that you both wrote together. But first, we thought maybe you could just tell us a little bit about yourselves. Like, where are you from? Where do you go to school, or anything else you'd like the audience out there to know?
So my name is Lucy, and I'm from Iowa, and I go to Northwest Junior High.
Great, great. Northwest Junior High, what grade are you in?
I'm in eighth grade.
Eighth grade, okay. And you live in Iowa City?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay, Natalie, what about you?
Hi, I'm Natalie. I am also from Iowa. I also go to Northwest, and I'm also in eighth grade.
Oh, cool. So did you two know each other before you collaborated on this writing piece? Like, had you known each other for a while, or?
Yeah, we've known each other since seventh grade.
Wow.
Yeah, we were like friends.
So what?
Did you meet in seventh grade? Did you go to the same elementary school, or you met at junior high?
We met at junior high.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what made you, when you found out about this contest and you knew that you were going to be submitting a story, I know that each of you write individually, and we'll come back to that, but what made you decide to collaborate on a piece together?
We thought it would be fun.
Yeah, no, to be honest, she kind of just told me the idea and was like, do this thing with me, and I was like, okay.
I love a friend like that.
Spontaneous.
I love just being told, like, all right, we're doing this.
Where did it happen? Were you in school? Were you, like, outside of school? Like,
we were in the writing club, and I was just like, hey, you're good at writing, so write with me.
Team leader.
So did you sit down right at that moment and write it, or did you sort of go away and think for a while and then get back together?
No, yeah, we thought for a while, and then we, like, went over to each other's houses and, like, made a plan and stuff.
Yeah. How did the writing take place? Was it, like, on paper, computer, like... What was the process like?
The planning was on paper, but then we just wrote it on the Google Doc.
Yeah, we spent like 30 minutes and we got like three pages of like just like what's going to happen next and then what's going to happen and then what's going to happen.
So you were
like
sort of
storyboard.
Yeah. So you were sort of talking it out as you went along.
Mm-hmm.
Like
yeah.
One of you was typing and the other one was kind of you were just discussing what was going to happen.
Now you said that you knew that she was a good writer. Is that in this writing club, are you sharing pieces with each other? How did you know?
Well, I just know that she reads like 24/7.
That's usually a clue.
And so, you're writing a lot as well?
Yeah.
And reading? Yeah. Maybe not as much.
Not as much.
So what was the process of writing? What's the name of the story is Under the Gaze of Two Pink Eyes. What a title. So tell us about the process of writing it. Was it fun? Was it challenging? Were there any parts that were challenging? Like Did you get stuck at all or just steamroll on through?
I thought it was really fun. Like, it wasn't super challenging. I kind of struggled with, like, dialogue, like what people would actually say versus what I wanted them to say, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had to think about, like, that's not what someone would say, you know? Like, I have to, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just, like, already had an idea for the ghost that we were writing about, and I was like, hey, a ghost-themed competition. Why not write about the ghost idea I've had for, like, the longest time?
Wow. I love it.
Did the idea change when you presented it to Natalie or as you were writing it? Did the original idea evolve as you were writing? Were there any discoveries or did it sort of stick pretty much to the plan you had for it?
It stuck pretty much to the plan, but I do wish if I could go back and rewrite it, I would like try and convey it a little more because I think the like actual plot and like what I planned for the ghost to be like was only really explained at the end, and
that's
something, like, if I could rewrite it, I would definitely change.
Yeah. So
this is, I mean, it could be a start for a much larger project, too, you know? Yeah. I mean, a lot of people take an idea like that, write a short story, and then you could do something like extend it into a novel together. You could make it into, like, a screenplay or into a script for the stage. You know, I mean, there's so many things you can do once you have that idea, especially when you're working as a team, when you're collaborating. Because writing is such a lonely endeavor sometimes because you do it with your own brain and just by yourself. And so I love seeing, like, collaborations with writers because then it becomes like a friendship and a social activity,
So I feel like Lucy is intrigued with the idea of continuing to develop it into something. Natalie, I'm not so sure.
And
you can rewrite it, right? I mean, it's been published, but I mean, I guess you could always revise it some more if you wanted to.
Yeah, I think like my best chance would like maybe turn it into a novel with her or something. But for like a screenplay or like a play, probably not. I'm not sure how people would dress up as the ghost monster me and Natalie described. It's kind of a little out there.
So Natalie, I have a question for you. If Lucy came to you with another idea for a collaboration, would you be interested or would you?
Well, I mean, it would depend on the idea, but I'd probably be fine.
Cool. So you both write individually as well, right? And you're in your free time. And when did you start doing that? When do you remember writing something and feeling sort of the magic of that creation?
I was probably like 10 or something. It was like the middle of the pandemic and I was kind of bored. So I was like, why not start writing? Because I've always wanted to start writing.
Do you remember what you started writing? Did you write a story? Did you just start sort of free associating? Was there?
I think it was like animal fantasy kind
of stuff. Yeah. Okay. Like, did it evolve from something you'd been reading?
An idea I'd had.
Yeah. Lucy, what about you?
I always been interested in writing since I can remember because I really love creating stories in my head. But when like I really started like liking like writing is probably sometime in elementary school. I remember a teacher in my social studies class was like, okay, so we're gonna study ancient Egyptian myths now, write a story in the style of an ancient Egyptian myth. And so I wrote a really crazy fantasy story that was like 10 pages long.
Wow.
It took me like half the class to read, and I'm pretty sure like student liked that because it was just taking up the entire class.
Oh, that's so cool.
What an amazing teacher. That's a great assignment. So how does writing, like when you are writing, how does it make you feel? Like how would you describe the way it makes you feel as you're writing?
I don't know. I mostly just get really like concentrated when I start writing.
Yeah.
But I know that when I'm done, I either feel like very frustrated because it didn't come out the way I wanted, or I feel like really satisfied.
Yeah.
So there's like no in between. Like it's very skewed.
Boy, I've heard that from a lot of other
writers.
That's
basically, I discovered through my own writing that I basically have to split my brain into two, and I have to be the writer at the beginning that's coming up with all the ideas and trying everything. And that person is having fun and everything's flexible. And then I have to switch over to editor. And my editor, Lauren, is so mean and cruel. It's nice to have them separate because then, you know, the writing Lauren can like play. yeah. you know, without, and then I know that the editor, Lauren, will take care of fixing it up, changing things around, you know.
Yeah, and editor Lauren cannot talk to writing Lauren until writing Lauren
They're
is
They're not
ready.
Allowed to talk.
Yeah, writing has to just go nuts.
Yeah.
And be like, okay, editor
You need
Lauren.
The freedom of yeah. that.
So, Lucy, what about you? How does writing make you feel?
It's usually like a somewhat calming, somewhat frustrating experience because I would write something, I would look back on it, and it'd be like, this sentence doesn't flow well. I need more fancy words in here. This sounds really childish. How can I make this sound like that one story I read like a billion years ago that was an absolute masterpiece that changed my life? This sucks.
Yeah.
Not that bad. It's a roller coaster of emotions.
That's so interesting to hear because we hear the exact same thing from like writers who have published multiple books, really wonderful writers. Sometimes when you write something, you just look back and you go, it's not very good. And then you have part of the writing process is just revising, is going back and trying to make it good. And
yeah, that's
I heard someone say once you can always take a sentence and make it a little better and then you can come back the next day and make
it
a little better. Yeah. So
do you feel like writing keeps you company, like in your brain?
Only when I'm writing like character interactions, because it feels like a social interaction to me because I'm trying to think of everybody doing this or everybody stuff like that, but like not when I'm thinking about like a single character.
Not particularly like writing, but making stories. I've always been a daydreamer. I just doze off and just my mind would wander to like a completely different thing, and and that's why I have like zero spatial awareness, because I would be like in the middle of like track practice and the teachers would be giving instructions and my mind would wander to a completely different thing, and when everyone's getting up and leaving, I have no idea where I'm going. So.
Yeah.
Oh, I did that all the time in PE.
You have a rich internal landscape.
There are people who say that to the outsiders, writers seem like they're very lazy because they're staring into space all the time.
Yeah, but we're actually like creating worlds.
It's part of the work. Yeah, it's part of the work.
And so when you, where did you hear about the contest? Did the writing club tell you about it or?
Yeah, our writing club told us. Yeah.
Okay.
What do you guys like to read? Like, what are you reading right now? Are there books or writers that you're both like smiling big time? Do you both have a couple of favorites or do you share a couple of favorites?
I really like fantasy and stuff like that and supernatural elements. She keeps trying to get me hooked on all her book series. She'll just be like, no, you can't go to the library. You have to read this first.
So. And what are these book series? Are they speculative, supernatural, or are they something different?
They are like almost always fantasy. I am a huge web novel fan. Web novels like Omniscient Reader's Viewpoint and Lord of the Mysteries.
Okay.
And there's also just some like other like there's some other like novel series like Heaven Official's Blessings and manga series like Land of the Lustrous that I made her read Heaven Official's Blessing, but she refuses to continue Land of the Lustrous.
Natalie, have you tried to get Lucy to read things and encountered any resistance?
No. I'm a pushover. I'm just like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
It's books, why not?
You just want someone to talk to. Like, that's the whole basis for like book clubs too, like getting other people to read the same thing as you.
Absolutely.
So you can talk about it. I know that feeling for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe we'll wrap it up with a question of what do you see in the future? Are you thinking that you're going to continue writing? Are you considering writing as a hobby/career in the future?
Yeah, I've always wanted to be an author.
I'm hoping I can become an author, but it isn't a stable job, so I'm...
It's true.
If you don't succeed... Then you need a plan B, but I think the idea of my career being to like create stories, which is something that I've just always been doing, I think that's like a dream career for me. So
yeah. Well, there are lots of different ways you can, you know, be a person who creates stories.
Yeah, many of us have day jobs.
Yeah, most writers I know have some kind of day job, and they make it all work out. So, well, I have one more question. Maybe this question's silly. If you were going to write a story from the point of view of any animal, what animal would it be, and why?
I have done that a lot.
Yes.
I would base it off of like a wolf because I have dogs and I know a lot of their characteristics and stuff. And I think it would be the easiest for me to get into the mind of.
I have no idea. But yeah. if I would choose, I'd probably choose like an ant or something because I think the life of an ant is really interesting. But I'd probably need to do a lot of research on animals and see, man, this animal's life is something that I wouldn't get demotivated immediately right now.
Well, I got to show you guys.
Those both sound amazing.
I do a comic strip Instagram, and my character is a wolf. Has a wolf.
Yeah, Lauren has amazing comics on Instagram. Wolves.
I love wolves. Wolf. So when you said that, I was like, yeah. But I also love the idea of an ant and trying to figure out like spatially what is happening in terms of like human objects. And then from an ant's perspective, that seems pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, Lucy, Natalie, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. And congratulations on your story win and your collaboration. And it's just been a pleasure. And we're wishing you all the best. We hope you enjoyed the interview. And now here's the story.
What do you think happens to those we've left behind? Our final story wonders the same thing. Here is an abridged excerpt from Under the Gaze of Two Pink Eyes by Lucy Liao and Natalie Witt, and read by Anne-Marie Berry.
When Iris first bought the house, she knew it wasn't going to be amazing. After all, you can't expect much from a house priced at a measly $10,000. But still, it looked rough. Cobwebs littered the corners of the room, and even the best-looking furniture there seemed like it would collapse the next second. Even just by setting down her boxes of clothes to unpack, the floor would creak dangerously. She went upstairs to take a look at the bedroom. Like the rest of the house, it was worn down. The bed covers were moth-eaten and yellow with age, and the paint on the walls were so chipped you could barely tell it was once white. The only thing in the room, apart from the bed and the dresser, was an old desk with a crinkled old image lying in the center. Iris crossed the room to look at it. As she approached the table, an old man's face came into view. He looked, well, old. Whoever had owned the house before her must have left it there. Picking it up, she went to the front of the house to throw it in the garbage bin outside. When Iris was satisfied, she went back up to the bedroom. She was about to replace the covers of the bed when something caught her eye. The picture of the old man had not moved an inch. Huh, that's weird. I could have sworn I threw this out, she mumbled. Once again, she went downstairs to throw it out. However, the second she went back into the room, she paused. The picture had reappeared once more. She repeated the action three more times before deciding to give up and let the picture rest. Opting to do what she had originally intended, entering the bedroom, changing the old yellow bedsheets to the newer ones she had brought along with her. Iris spent the next hour fixing up the house and unpacking a few essentials she would need for the night. After eating a quick dinner, she headed upstairs to bed. The stars were already shining through the pitch-black sky. Closing her eyes, she slipped into a deep slumber. And almost immediately into a dream. Rip, rip. The sounds of water droplets falling into a puddle could be heard. It was dark, but the puddle needed no light to reflect. When one gazed into the strange black water, they could see two bright pink eyes. Staring back in concentration, the pupils were slits, resembling those of a feline. Drip, drip, drip. The sounds gradually increased in frequency as the eyes glowed brighter, slowly producing a blinding light, one that made it impossible to stare directly into. Drip, 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 drip. The noise became so fast. It was hard to hear the individual droplets hitting the surface, the sounds slowly meshing together
into one similar to the rushing water of a barely turned on faucet. The eyes glowed even brighter, lighting the pitch black void into a star-like white. The brightness and the sound quickly started to fade, however, being substituted for the creaks of wood and the darkness of closed eyes, which quickly flew open to reveal the dusty ceiling of the bedroom. A monster entered her view. It was indistinguishable from any animal. Limbs were horribly stitched onto it, some infested with maggots and visibly rotting away. It pranced around on all fours as messy, strange, human-like black hair flailed around, and its movements were stiff, like its mind was in a body it didn't belong. Two bright pink eyes were on its face, the only part of its body that didn't seem to be decaying. The eyes seemed most familiar, as if she'd encountered them before. But that was foolish. Humans don't have neon pink eyes. She tried to recall where she'd seen them before, but her mind was too scrambled. Iris let out a breath as she woke up. What a weird dream, she muttered to herself. She was about to close her eyes again when she noticed a faint scent lingering in the bedroom. It almost resembled one rotting flesh. Although if that were the case, why had she not noticed it earlier? Dismissing it as a remnant of the dream, she closed her eyes again. The next day, she awoke to a familiar smell, the same one she'd encountered last night. Getting out of bed, she made up her mind to find the source of whatever it was. Better to deal with it now than have it get worse and become stronger. It was most likely a dead rodent or something anyway. Iris began to step out of the room, following her nose and quickly arriving at her small living room. She traced the scent to the couch and lifted the cushions up, pinching her nose as she did so. What was under the cushions, however, was not a rat nor a mouse, but a rotten limb that resembled a human's leg. It was not attached to any pelvis. The top of the thigh had stretched and torn skin, as if it had been ripped off the body through brute force. Maggots roamed the browning flesh, eating away at it and laying its eggs. On the shin near the foot, the maggots had eaten enough flesh to see the white bone underneath. Iris let out a blood-curdling scream and leapt backwards. She slammed the cushion back down, her legs instinctively sprinting out of the house. Before she knew it, her feet had carried her down the street and over to the town center, where small businesses shouted about their discounts and small kids played with their kites. Should she call the police? Should she just get the hell out of this city? Iris sat down on a bench, knees weak and shaky. There, she caught her breath and tried to make sense of what she'd seen. Perhaps she had interpreted the rotting limb wrong? Perhaps it was a rat or a mouse after all? Thousands of thoughts drowned her mind, making her head spin. But the image of the rotting limb filled her mind as she remembered the creature haunting her dream. Was it real? Fear filled her once more.
Iris?
A voice broke her out of her trance. It was her neighbor. That house, there was a monster, a thing. I don't know. Iris quickly started to ramble in a panic state, her eyes unfocused and her voice unsteady. The neighbor raised her eyebrows. She seemed less surprised about the limb and more surprised about Iris herself. After a long pause, she gestured to her living room and said kindly, "Why don't you come in?" Shakily, Iris nodded her head. The second she stepped into the room, her knees collapsed under her. Thousands of thoughts were running through her mind, some trying to console her panicked mind, and others just making it worse. She took a deep breath and sighed before aggressively rubbing her eyes. "I'm sorry for intruding. I don't know what came over me. It was just so..." She was cut off.
"I knew something like this would happen. Was waiting for it. We all were. Only we didn't expect to see you."
"Why not?"
"Well, frankly, we thought you'd be dead by now,"
her neighbor stated calmly, as if they were discussing the weather.
Most people don't make it past the first night.
Iris was utterly confused. What the hell is that supposed to mean? Is my life in danger?
Why, yes, I suppose it is,
the neighbor stated matter-of-factly. What? She shrieked. Why are you so calm about this?
It's not like I'm gonna die.
You're an asshole.
Just stating the truth.
What aren't you telling me? Why do you think I'm gonna die?
Because that's what always happens. Someone moves in, they start freaking out about monsters and limbs, and then they die. I don't know about any monsters, but something is definitely going on. If you want, I'll let you stay over. You're taking the couch, though.
Yes, Iris blurted out. Sorry, yes, that would be great. I'm going to go find another home, and I'm going to move the hell out of here.
All right, then, just don't bother me and don't eat my food. Don't mess up my furniture either, you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. She walked off, glaring at Iris out of the corner of her eye. The moment she was out of earshot, Iris let out a sigh of relief, glad to get out of the house. But as she lay on the couch and prepared for an uncomfortable night, a thought struck her. Was it possible that escaping the house wasn't enough? Would this monster follow her out and stalk her the rest of her life? Would she ever be able to forget the sight of the limb under the couch? Closing her eyes, she fell into an uneasy sleep. Iris gasped as she sat up, her eyes shaking. Frantically, her head spun side to side as if terrified that something was there. Calming herself, she hopped off the couch with shaky legs. You're not in that house, Iris. It's not here. It's not here. It's not. She paused, catching something in the corner of her vision. Outside the window, there was a hunched figure waiting at the doorstep of the home. What was it waiting for? Mystery. It resembled a human, though it was hard to see through the darkness of the night. It looked up, its hair sliding off its face to reveal what seemed to be a pair of glowing pink eyes. Almost immediately, Iris recoiled behind the couch, gasping for air. No, it was just a hallucination. Maybe she was going crazy. It was definitely just a hallucination. As she looked back again, the figure was still there. As the figure started towards the house, wait! She covered her mouth. It would be disrespectful to wake up the woman who had graciously allowed her to stay, so she quietly opened the front door, closing it behind her, and sprinting out. She slipped between a crack in the door so as not to cause a racket and turned to where the figure was walking. Stop! Don't go in there! The figure paused and slowly turned on its heel to look in her direction. As she sprinted up to it, she barely had time to register the glowing pink eyes before it reached out and tightly grasped her arm. Desperately, she tried to pull free, but the thing was stronger. Keeping a firm grip on her arm, it tugged her into the house she hoped never to set foot in again. Once they had fully gone inside, the door shut behind them with a loud bang. Iris attempted to break its hold, but it resisted and pulled her up the stairs of the house. She felt the figure let go of her as she collapsed to her knees. Her eyes scanned the familiar run-down living room, but there was no trace of the thing that had dragged her inside. A small slip of paper glided from a crack in the ceiling down to the floor, landing in front of her. Iris completely ignored it, running up to the door and trying to open it, only to find it was locked. With no other option, she decided to pick up the paper. It was the same picture that was on the bedroom desk, the one she tried to throw away multiple times. This time, however, there were words written on the bottom of the image reading, "Where?" in extremely bad handwriting. The words had the stench of blood Iris has now become so familiar with, and was followed up by an arrow pointing to the face of the old man, drawn in the same material. Where? Iris mumbled before calling out. I don't know where. I don't know who he is or who you are. I swear, please let me go. She stood up, walking around the house and begging. Hello? Can you hear me? I don't know anything. Unlock the door. Let me live, please. If the monster could write an English word, surely it could understand her pleas, even vaguely. As she continued to walk, more slips of paper appeared in front of her. Whether from a crack in the floorboards, a hole in the wall, or a cavity in the ceiling, they all landed in front of her with the exact same old man in the pictures. One was of the old man next to a lake, another was in a shop. The word where, followed by an arrow that pointed to the man's face, was hastily written on every image, the handwriting getting more and more jittery than the previous. Honestly, Iris just got more confused by the second. By the 15th picture, she was just plain annoyed. Throwing her arms in the air, she stared at the ceiling in frustration. What do you want me to say? She let out a hysterical-sounding laugh. I don't know where. Stop asking. But more and more pictures continued to flood in, the words on them becoming more and more aggressively sloppy. She batted them out of the way irritably as she went around trying to open windows, doors, anything that might let her escape. They were all locked. To be continued.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Iowa, the Maggot Center for Writing, the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, and the Graduate College. We'd like to thank the Center for Language and Culture Learning for use of their podcast studio. Sad Me of the Past is part of the Writing University Podcast Network at the University of Iowa. This network includes podcasts from creative writing programs and departments all across our campus. Visit writinguniversity.org/podcasts to see our full list of offerings, including Writing Matters, The 11th Hour, Origins, The Short Coat, and more.